Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello there.
It's me. I'm trying to change it
up. I know.
Still,
I really like the variation.
It's going to be CBeebies bedtime.
Hello there.
Hello there. It's me, Ellie Gibson.
Are you feeling tired?
Yes.
You had a long day.
Aren't we all?
Dun, dun, dun,
and who
dun,
are you?
Oh, I'm Helen Thorne. Ha ha ha.
That's very good.
Oh,
and our guest today is Esther Manito. Hello, Esther.
Hello. I don't have a thing to say.
No, but you just do you.
You've got your CBeebies thing.
And what? Welcome, Esther, to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
She's now questioning her life choices.
Yeah. Why don't you introduce yourself, Esther? Who are you, Esther Manito?
I'm a stand-up comedian, and that's pretty... and a mum.
Yeah,
and that's it.
What's that like?
It's lovely because you get lots and lots of judgments. So that's always fun, isn't it? Mm. You get lots of people in your personal life who are just absolutely in awe of the fact that your husband has to look after children of an evening.
His very own children.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? That your husband looks after his own children while you're just a slag out there.
going to work. People have
earning
done.
Money.
Yeah, earning money.
Maybe it's... being a little bit happy.
And then when you talk about it on stage and talk about your kids and stuff, it's lovely when people then write to you lovely comments about how they feel sorry for your children. And you're just like, it's quite a funny old world.
It's a funny old game.
The fact that...
they must be very happy people, though. Very secure in themselves. If they have, like, do you know what? I'm going to spend some time writing to someone I don't know to tell them that they're doing it wrong.
I don't know. I just feel like we just... there's still this whole weird guilt, subconscious. I think there's still a lot of frustration that maybe you're saying things that other people are like, well, I haven't been able to say that, or I've kept my mouth shut. Why are you blethering on about it?
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. Sorry, I went straight to the next.
No, let's get into it.
Lots of positives.
We love it. We're here for a moment, Esther.
Is your husband... So Helen and I have previously had, let's say, different experiences of having a male partner when we're doing comedy.
Yes.
One of our partners is very supportive and you know, likes what we do and is very proud of us, and one of our partners was very resentful and unpleasant about the whole thing. Which category does your partner fall into, Esther?
I'm now divorced and incredibly happy.
I was like...
so very, very happy. You were like, ah.
If you were divorced, I was like, my husband is supportive, but it wasn't always that way. When I first started out, it was a big shock to everyone. And to be fair to my husband, he was a bit like... because my son was 5 months when I started. And obviously I'm not earning when you start. You're doing the open mics and all the rest of it. So my husband was just a bit like, sorry, so you're going out 3 or 4 nights a week, getting in at 1 o'clock in the morning. You're then going to be up breastfeeding and we're all grouchy and knackered and you're not doing this for any money. And it's essentially just a hobby that you could do once a week.
Yeah.
And I just was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what that
yeah,
is.
That's yeah, what, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And he was like, right, okay. I mean, it's really unreasonable. And I was like, yeah, it is. But I'm just going to be a bit selfish.
Was there a compulsion, like, no, because I had that. But I started when my son, Charlie, was...
God, what about...
Yeah.
20 months. So,
I'm
yeah.
all good.
But people always say to me, like, why did you start? Why did you have this baby and go, all right, I've got this baby and now this huge thing. I know what I'll do. I'll start an entirely new career that, as you say, is incredibly badly paid, at least to start off with, if not for the whole of your life, and go and drags me out of the house. What, did you have a compulsion? Were you not, I've just got, this is something I've got to do?
No, so I started with a friend of mine. She said, will you come and do a course, like comedy course? Mm. And I thought, do you know what? That's a Sunday. It's a 6-week course. It's a few hours on a Sunday. I'll go and do it, and that at least, because I did find that after I had my second, I kind of shut down mentally a little bit.
Mm.
I just found myself like going, oh, I don't know how to chat. I don't know if you two had that, but so my daughter was 2, my son was like 3-4 months, and I just found that I was sat at a baby group and this mum was trying to have a conversation with me, and in my head it was a little bit like that bit from Ross in Friends where he's just going, just say anything, say anything, and I was just looking at this woman going, I have nothing I don't want to talk. I'm sure you're lovely, but I have no opinions on these children. Like, I want my kids to be happy and I love them and everything, but I don't think this can be it for me. So when my friend said to me, come and do this course, I thought, okay, well, it's creative, it's going to get me out of the house, it will just be something for my own brain. And then after the 6 weeks, you had to do 5 minutes of stand-up, and I was like, oh, fuck that, I'm not doing that, no way, because, you know, it's not me. But then I ended up doing it, and that was it, just the bug was there, and I was like, right, I'm going to keep on doing it.
Because we've been doing Scummy Mummies for, it's just 10 years this year, and I had 6 years off before I got back into comedy, because I was doing, but it was when my son was 18 months old, and just in the middle of the night going, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Yeah. Why? I need something else. I need to...
You do find that, don't you?
Feel myself again. Yeah, exactly.
It was, it was a really weird moment of just going, oh, I have no thoughts.
Three or four months, though, we've all do that to you as well. And having a toddler, because you've got that cumulative tiredness. Like, it's not like you get reset with the second one. You're still carrying the tiredness.
Yeah, you do feel permanently hungover.
Yeah.
And it's like, right now, I should just be in Sensations Crisps and watching Hollyoaks. Like, that's what should be happening. But I'm not. I'm having to raise these children. Mm. And you do feel like you're in that hungover state. Yeah, shit.
Yeah.
But...
So how old are your kids now?
7 and 9.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I have to think about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in, well, I like to think it's quite, I don't know, maybe
it's quite a sweet. Yeah.
Well, it's better than the bit where they can't wipe their own arses or put their own seatbelts on, right?
Yeah. But... I saw someone the other day, and we went out for a pub lunch, and I saw a dad doing that thing, you know, when they're not quite walking independently. And so they were a couple, and he was just walking this toddler, you know, when he's got two hands.
The two fingers.
Just walking up and down so she could eat, and then he would sit down and she'd walk them up and down. And I was like, I do not miss that.
No.
That back breaking. You want to move all the time, but you can't do it. You're just like this.
And it's always their eyes across the pub, like, you do it. He's running. I just sat down.
And then you have a glass of wine and you're like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, about how for different people, different bits are, like, I quite like the baby bit, even though they didn't sleep. I'd support and it was lucky. But for me, the toddler bit, that bit, the running around, the never being able to eat a meal completely and with the second, because the first one would sit in a high chair for hours and hours, and the second one was like, why the fuck would you sit down? I don't care that we're in a restaurant.
Like that. My daughter would just sit, but my son was just like, he was just like, you know, like salmon when they're just going upstream. He was just the most thrashiest child. He just thrashed his way from birth. And I was just like, sometimes, you know, you just like, I really, it's really bad. I used to fantasize about, you know, that like electrical tape.
Yeah, just strap him in.
I just want to just strap him like a board.
Just stop.
Safe, but just to stop. I literally just hold him going, please, just stop. And he's like, gotta move.
Well, but you're getting into the teenage bit though, Helen, aren't you?
Yeah. So
how does that compare?
It's a different frustration, I think, and it's hard to sort of equate, because they're, you know, with teenagers, I can have really interesting conversations, but then it's like the hormones that you have to deal with. So, like, one day they're really lovely, and the next day it's like, you don't understand. I'm like, I do understand. I was a teenage girl, and I did do all this sort of stuff. And it's sort of, that's the frustration thing. And also that they call you up for money every day. It's like, hiya, mum. How are you? How's your dad? I'm like, what do you want? It's just all money, money, money. But also, I stress about the fact... 14 and 12. 14 and 12. So, and then you get the chats about drinks and drugs and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And
do
you
they
know,
do that now? I thought they're all just into like
green tea. Oh, No. So they're really curious, and you have to. I tell them enough of the truth of what they need to hear right now.
Right.
And I, you know, about drugs and things like that. I said, yeah, I did smoke some weed in university, but I was with trusted friends, and, you know, it was organic. And
it was organic.
We had a lovely time.
And it was bought ethically.
Yes, yes. Right. Yes, I from the local farmer.
No one was, yeah.
Actually had a box. We had a weekly box delivered.
Yeah, yeah.
Organic weed.
It was hello lovely. Fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
Really nice.
Delivery. Hello fresh.
Yes, it's so fresh. So all those are things. So it's a sort of kind of balancing all that sort of stuff. But I don't miss being so tired that I you know, contemplating walking in front of a train. That
tiredness is something else. I just used to want to go into a travel lodge. My husband would be like, "What do you want for your birthday?" And I was like, "Just put me in a travel lodge for just one night. I just want one night in a travel lodge."
And we get, because at the end of our stage show, we get confessions from the audience, and we've had quite a few times things like, "Oh, I told my husband I was going to my friend's wedding. But actually, I just went and stayed in a hotel on my own for like 48 hours and then came home.
Yeah.
But now I've got a problem because my friend actually is getting married. And I've got... like, why are they getting married again? They just got married last year.
Yeah. I love that.
People join gyms for the creche. And they said, well, I put my kid in the creche. And then I have a shower for a long time and play Candy Crush in a towel.
Yeah.
And I just sit still. But that, I mean, isn't that indicative? It's the
mental, it's the mental load. And I think this is what my show is talking about, is the fact that we...
Is that Hell Hath No Fury?
Hell Hath No Fury.
I heard that's amazing. The buzz.
I've had mixed reports.
But it's basically on that. It's the emotional labour that is just laden subconsciously upon women, and the fact that whatever a guy does, it's essentially me just having a breakdown for an hour. But it's all the little
on all comedy shows, really.
There isn't a kind of serious element to it. It is all the little things. All those little things of being a partner and a mother and a woman, just that really fucking get on your nerves, from getting on the tube to trying to sort your kids out and stuff. But it is the fact that it, like, whatever my husband does is just a positive. And people are so quick to reinforce that. They're so quick to tell me he's an amazing dad. And I'm just like, that doesn't happen the other way.
Mm.
Because there is just still this subconscious thing of, it's your job.
Yeah, you're the fucking doormat.
But that's...
Yeah.
I'm like, but let that... If you want that to be my job, then make it a job. Make it something that's respected. Let a woman be a housewife and a mother, but make it respected. Don't then go, right, you also... We now live in an economy where you need two salaries. So you're going to run the house and the children, and you're going to work, and you're going to manage all the other shit. And then I'm going to follow you around the house going, what's the plan?
Mm.
Every Saturday morning. Where do they need to go? What's the plan? Who are we seeing?
Oh, that is so triggering. Oh my God. Sorry, I've just gone back a few years. Yeah.
You're having a flashback.
Oh my God.
I did that in my last show. I did a bit about that, because most of the people that come and see me are women, and then they'll come occasionally with a male partner, and I'll go, I know for a fact that you have not bought the tickets. They bought the tickets. And that is because if you don't want to be here, then start planning your own social calendar.
Yeah.
And the amount of times, the amount of times you have men every Saturday just going, what's the plan? And these women would just go, yes! And it's such a small thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember once I came back, and this is going to be, sorry, quick purge, but the shopping had been delivered, and it was in the middle of the kitchen, and then I had to take the kids out to do, you know, a million things. I came back 3 hours later, and the shopping was still in the middle of the kitchen, and my ex-husband was sitting on the couch with the iPad, and I said, what the fuck? And he was like, you didn't tell me to put it away.
Yeah.
I'm having a flashback, and I wasn't even there. So my husband.
That makes me clench.
Yeah.
See, I had all this when I started comedy, of like when I would go out and gig, and obviously there were babies then, so I'd come home, and I kid you not, they would just be, do you remember? I love the way I'm acting like we were all in the same marriage. Do you remember?
It feels like we were.
guys.
Oh. You know that mole on his arse cheek? The right arse cheek. You know that mole? The hairy one.
You know that thing he likes when he sticks it? No. But you know when, like, they're little and they would have a bath, but the bath water would be left in.
Oh.
And then the nappies are on the floor in front of the bath. So I came home and I remember just, I'd come back from a gig, and bear in mind that I'd made sure that everything, because what I did is I nearly broke myself in order to ensure that what I was doing wouldn't impact the children. So I'd just be awake. So I was gigging at times on like 3 blow passes and like a can of Red Bull. And people would be like, sorry, there's just a bit of blood coming out of your nose. I'm like, yeah, no, it's all fine. Everything's under control.
I got a list. I'm good.
And then I come home and you go and you see all the dirty clothes going up the stairs and the bath water still filled and the dishes still left in the sink. And he would just be like, you're welcome. The kids are alive. And you're like, oh, you, that's literally in your mind, you're like, I have gone way beyond the call of duty because I've done a day's work and I've put the kids to bed and everything else that surrounds that.
Yeah, it's not my job.
That's all waiting
and
for
I
you.
Compare it to now, it's so different now. It's so 50-50 now. But that has come from literally just going, you're just going to have to work it out on your own.
Well, I was going to say, so I'm thinking of people listening to this who were that person, right? Who were that person that we've all been at different times. Mine was actually before me and Pete got married. So years ago, before we had kids, we actually split up for a bit. And part of that, if not most of that, was to do with I wanted to get married and have kids. And I really liked him. But I was like, I can't live with you like this. Because he used to like smoke quite a lot. And like I remember the one of the turning points was I went to America for work. I went to LA for like a week and I came home and we didn't have a dishwasher. We just had a little flat in Forest Hill. We didn't have a dishwasher. And every surface in the kitchen was covered with dirty crockery, including the crockery from the meal that I had cooked the night before I left for America. And I was like, you know when you're like, right, just be chill. Why you try and be calm, them? Don't you? Try and be like...
try and be calm. You're very different from
me.
Be
a bitch. And just be like, right, let's... All right. I was like, right, let's just make a cup of tea. I'd literally just got off a plane as well. And I was like, I'm just going to... And I opened the cupboard and there were no mugs. Every single mug. Isn't. He'd been drinking tea out of a Pyrex jug rather than wash a mug. And I looked in the fridge and there was... I was like, I wash a mug, that's fine. I looked in the fridge. Then there was no milk that was in date. We did have a huge fucking row. And he was really defensive. He was like, why are you taking the moral high ground? And I was like, because that's where I live now. I'm going to the garage to get some milk. I'm going to sit on the moral high ground for about 15 minutes. And when I come back, there's going to be a fucking clean mug for me to have a cup of tea. And luckily there was. But it was things like that that built up. And eventually we split up. And when we got back together, we had to have some really serious conversations about...
I think the that's not okay. Most infuriating bit, though, is the bit when they take umbrage at you getting annoyed. So you come in and go, sorry, could you just explain why there is feculence on the carpet?
Feculence!
Marvellous word.
I think that's the first time I've had that word on the podcast in 10 years. Excellent.
And why the children have gone to nursery in Halloween costumes. And it's just straight away like, oh my God, you just like give it... It's just this teenager-y response. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, okay, can you respond like a normal human being? Mm. Like, it's really defensive because they know, I guess. They know that they've
that's
been
yeah. We've yeah. sometimes had the defensive bit, and then later we've had a little apology where it's like, I knew I was in the wrong, and yeah, 100%. Yeah, and it's like, so just fucking
100%, 100%.
But to go back to my question, so what would you say to someone? Sorry, I'm just moaning again, just ranting again.
How do you change them?
For me and Pete, it was we had to sit down, and I had to be really honest about this is what I expect, and this is what I want. And even then, after we got married and had kids and all that, we kind of had to redo all that because it was like. Because I think as well when you have babies, or certainly for us, because one of you is on maternity leave, which was me, and he was at work, I did do all the shopping and all the shit. And then suddenly when we started working more, Helen, it was like, no, we're going to have to remind each other that actually the imbalance has crept back in for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And we've got to readjust it. Like, how have you managed all that?
I think because I was a teacher, so... I was teaching and then we had the children and then I did a little bit of teaching as I started doing stand-up. So I was working as a teacher, also doing stand-up and had the babies. But I think psychologically my husband still had these real conventional values of these quite high standards. And it was quite weird because it's like, but if you want these high standards, then that's not on me. Like you're not my CEO. I don't need to sit down and have an appraisal every now and then. Like,
yeah, they're your KPIs. Yeah. They're not mine.
So to begin with, I had that guilt and I was trying to make sure everything worked. But it literally has just come from, well, you're just going to have to sort that out. I will literally do 50%. So when I'm in that house, so I'm there every day. I do the school drop off, school pickup. I will do that. I will 100% cover that. I'll cook the dinner. That's all fine. But when it's you taking over, you can manage them. Because I had a lot of, where I used to come home and he'd be like, oh, you're in trouble now, mum's home. Right, can I just tell you what they've been doing? And I'm like, no, I don't have to come home and bother the kids and be the police. You're in trouble now, mum's home. I'm like, what are you, not?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it has. It's taken, what have I been doing? 7 years.
Yeah.
So it's taken probably, I reckon, in the last 3-4 years since I'm now earning an equal to him. Yeah. And it's now, like, my career. It definitely has changed things a lot. But it has been, you're just going to have to sort that out.
Yeah.
I've had the phone calls in Edinburgh going, where is Tiffy McFiggins or whatever? And you're like, do you know what? I'm just about to come downstairs. You're just going to have to sort this. Absolute crisis.
No one's going to die. Really, no one's going to die.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, but that's good, and it's good that you can work that out, because I found that very difficult. But also, what was really reassuring, and I've said this to Ellie and Pete many times, is that I was always showed that there was another way, that there was another couple living exactly the same. Like, Ellie and I were going away for exactly the same amount of time away from our husband. One husband coped very well, and another husband had an affair.
Like EastEnders.
Oh, mate, you don't even know the half of it.
He coped very well. He just put himself into something else.
Yes.
So to speak.
Poured all his energies into...
Jesus.
Yeah, but it's interesting how people respond to stress or just not...
But also feeling quite threatened, maybe.
Mm.
Like, the fact that you're doing that, it's suddenly like, well... Does that make me less of a man because I'm at home with children? So now I need to feel really empowered. And whereas
or some kind of certificate or medal every day.
Really patronising to men as well. So we're kind of like, there's always this culture of like, oh, he's so good, he's so amazing. And I'm like, well, no, he's not a child. He can pack a fucking pack lunch.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to give him a certificate because he managed to put his kid's socks on. Like, why are we underestimating so much?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm one of 5 children. I've got 3 brothers. And I remember my mum ringing me up and... Bearing in mind, all my family's in Australia, and anyway, I'm bringing up my children largely by myself. And she rings me up and said, "Your brother made his daughter's spaghetti bolognese the other day." I'm like, "He is amazing.
He's so."
I'm like,
"What a keeper!
Three meals, snacks. I'm doing all the cleaning, but no." Big news, everyone. Pop it in the Christmas letter.
Yeah. And maybe not, but I'm guessing maybe he's dirtied every single pan in the kitchen. He's 4 packets of mints at a cost of £5.99 each.
Yeah, and that spaghetti bolognese costs £74 to make. Yeah. Everything was bought for at the deli rather than in Aldi.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go back to what you said about, you know, I don't want you to be the CEO. You don't want your partner to be the CEO giving you an appraisal. But I've had sort of almost the opposite conversation with Pete sometimes where I've gone, I don't want to be the CEO. Mm. I don't want to be the person in charge of delegating, because he'll be like, well, tell me what to do. You know, what do you need? And I'll help you. He's not a bad dude. You know, he's a feminist. He does want to do his share of the work. But he used to want me to identify exactly what that was and when it was required by. And as we know, that's a whole other job in itself.
But you've got to manage somebody else.
Yeah.
No, I can't be dealing with that. I really can't. And I used to do it. I used to do it all the time. And even now sometimes I find myself before I go to gigs, I'm like, right, you've got a birthday party. Let me pre-wrap the present. I'll leave the present on the... I mean, not to a horrific extent. I have seen other women when they've literally just left out the instructions in so much detail with every day what a child needs if they're going to be away for a couple of days with, you know, going away with friends for a weekend or something. And I'm like, no, I can't live like that. I can't live like that. So you're just going to have to manage it on your own.
Yeah, but then you're in 2 places at once. You know, you can't fully, you know, you're like going, but have they not read that? Or, you know.
It's also really unattractive.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really unattractive to have to manage somebody like they're a child. It's like...
It's not sexy.
I don't want to have sex with somebody that I also have to fucking burp. Like...
Yeah, do your own burps. That's hot. That's really hot. That shit. Yeah, and but that presence thing makes me think of, like, we've had to come up with, like, practical divisions of labour, like rules, which sounds so boring and, again, not sexy.
No.
But to make it work, so for presents, I buy the presents for the kids, for the parties and all that. I don't mind doing that because it's something I can do online when we're on tour.
Yes, yeah.
And I remember vaguely what we got kids last year, or vaguely what they're into. Mm. But the deal is I buy them and then he wraps them. And okay. That seems to... Stuff like that seems to work. But having said that, at the weekend I fucked up and I hadn't got Indy a present. It was my son Charlie's birthday the day before. So Indy's dad turns up with this child, drops him off, and he gives me a card and, like, £15. And he's like, I really fucked up. I was supposed to get the present, but I'm really hungover and I didn't get the present and I even forgot to put the money in the card. I was like, that's all right, mate. Don't worry. We got this.
Yeah.
We're fine. And off he went. And then the next day, it was Indy's birthday party and I was like, shit, Charlie, where's that £15? I need it. I need it. So we just gave the same £15 back to Indy.
That's fucking, like, awesome. That's a life hack.
Just that's what that's it just is. Like, but now we owe my 12-year-old son £15.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Just keep passing it back and forward.
Oh, but yeah, but I love a life hack. Have you got any life hacks, Helen, for dealing with all that?
I'm
well, now you're a single mum. Like, you must have had to come up with different systems and stuff. Or is it not that different because you were doing it all anyway on your fucking own before?
I just don't sit down. I just don't sit down anymore. That's the main thing. But also, I really love that I make my children do more things because I go, I'm really fucking tired. And if I said I want to be in bed by 10. And I will be in bed by 10. You stay up, you'll be tired at school and you'll be fucked. But I'm going to go to bed about 10. So, like, last night I was like, Hugo, you're either going to do the dishes or you're going to hang out the washing. What are you going to do? He's like, oh, I'm going to do the dishes. So he put away the dishes while I hung out the washing. And we had a chat and all that sort of stuff. But we were both doing jobs at exactly the same time. Because what I don't like, if I'm doing the dishes or jobs and I'm just huffy puffy, so then that's resentful. I'm like,
mine too are so slobby.
They're seven and nine. No offense, but they're fucking idiots, you know. Yeah, they all are,
you know,
at that
you're
age.
Just like, can you just pick one thing up? It's just like, and then they're always like trailing their hands along the wall,
oh, they're
and
sticky.
You're like, just
yeah.
Everything is just
literally. Before you came today, I went round this morning with a magic eraser and was, because we had 8 boys for a sleepover on Saturday, so I literally was going around the house just wiping off muddy print. I was like, it looked like they'd gone out, rubbed their hands in the flower beds, and then just come in and, like, mime artists just like all along the wall.
Years ago, me and my husband owned a flat. And then we were renting it out and we decided to sell the flat. So we turned up to clean the flat before we put it on the market. Mm. And we rented it to a single guy who was a mechanic. And I was like, none of the lights work.
What?
Like, none of the lights going on. And then I looked at the walls and the walls just had thick black hand marks all along. And I said to Neil, those light bulbs have gone out, and instead of buying new light bulbs, he has come in from work and just felt his way around the living room and the kitchen because the only light that worked was in the bedroom. So he's I'll open the fridge door. If I can get to the fridge door, I'll open that, get some food out, and then I'll work my way back, and then there's...
It's like CSI.
And you're like... The unpleasantness you're prepared to endure just to not change... And you're talking, this is a mechanic. This is a guy who can graft.
He's got skills.
He's got skills. He can change a light bulb. No.
How many does it take? Yeah.
I'm just going to live like something from, I don't know.
It's just exhausting.
Bird Box. What's it called, that film?
It's Sandra Bullock. Yeah.
It's great for the environment. It's really cutting down on emissions. He's doing his part. He really is.
But let's talk about your living situation. Sorry, yeah. So am I right that you live with your dad?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How's that? Because we spend a lot of time with my dad.
Yes.
He's our roadie a lot of the time. So,
oh, okay. Yeah.
So we see him for a lot of time every week.
Sometimes 3 or 4 nights a week with Ellie's dad.
Sometimes in a van for up to 6 hours. It's intense. He's well up for it. Yeah, yeah. And he's lovely. What's he like?
He is incredibly sweet. He's an incredible grandfather, but he's very cut off from what I do. I don't think he fully gets it. He's just like, she goes off and does that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just don't really know what
And does he help your husband? And can they team parent?
They're really funny because it is sometimes like they're bickering, like they're a married couple. And sometimes my husband will be like, do you know what? I didn't actually sign up to marry a 78-year-old Lebanese man.
I seem to find it in the fine print of our marriage certificate that... It, for sickness, health.
So I'm trying to do the shopping and I've got the kids yapping on and your dad's behind me going, no, 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 I want this, I want that. And I'm just like losing my mind.
So how much of an influence has the Lebanese element been on your upbringing, your own parenting now?
Yeah, I mean, because I only really have relationships with my Lebanese side. I see my mum, but I don't really have a lot of... connections to my mum's side, so everything's been always on my dad's side, and so the kids are very aware of that part of their heritage, and I'd say more so than other kids that are only a quarter of something. They definitely have a lot, like they eat the food a lot and they hear, you know, Arabic spoken in the house, and so they're a lot more aware of it. But I think in a way it's made them just use, because I was, so my dad, when I was growing up, he would just yell all the time. So to the point where the yelling kind of didn't mean anything anymore, you know, and someone's just always screaming. So in a way, I've inherited that.
Yeah.
So when their friends come round and I'll just be like constantly, and they're just like, they just turn to their friends and go, she'll carry on, don't worry, just we'll crack on. And their friends are like, oh God, your mum just doesn't like, shut up. And they're just like, yeah, no, don't worry about it.
No, I had a friend like that growing up. She had an Irish dad who would just constantly just fucking shout.
Yeah.
But even I became totally inured to it. I was just like, oh yeah, he's off again, it's fine.
And because my dad will still sometimes treat me like I'm a child, like he'll just come in, like he always just slap me around the head as from a kid. He'll just do it all the time.
So what, as a sign of like affection or as a punishment? Or
no, just like, just to kind of get my attention or whatever. So sometimes I'll just be sat there watching the TV and he just comes in and belts you around the head and you're just like,
wow.
Dad, you know, and I'm 40. Yeah.
How about so, hello? Words are good.
Reminds
use your
me, word. We had Cindy V on, who said that when her mum was upset with her, she used to hit herself on the head with a tea tray. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do.
Oh, no, that's that. Arabs do that as well.
Oh right.
That's okay. I didn't have an Arab mother, but Arab mother. So my aunts and stuff would do that. So if your children were naughty, you would beat yourself. Like, look how upset you've made me. I'm punishing myself.
Wow.
So you then have got the guilt that not only have you done wrong, you're now inflicting pain on your mother.
But you don't engage in
I
that
don't
practice.
Beat myself. I don't.
No. That's not something you change up around the culture. That's a life hack. Just get yourself a kitchen tray and work the tray.
I like a chopping board. Yeah. Not such a clattery noise.
You're just smashing yourself over the head with a frying pan. Look what you've made me done. And mum's in hospital again. No, I didn't pick up on that, but I think they're quite... But my dad was... He was never aggressive, never violent, but he would do things... Like, he was quite lazy as well in terms of disciplining. So we used to get a lot of... I'm going to put my fist out, just run towards it, because I can't be bothered to stop him.
But do you enjoy living with him?
Yeah, I mean, it's got its positives, it's got its negatives, but, you know, you just muddle along, it's family dynamics. And in a way, I'm quite glad that the children are seeing that as well, because then they will probably feel guilty enough to make me, well, have me live with them when I'm old. So it's all just about how... Yeah, that's a life hack.
Yeah.
Bring in an old person, any old person... And then just get them to live with you, and then your kids will then want you to live with them.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you're old.
Yeah, at the moment, it's my mum's quite poorly, that my older brother and my older sister are living with my mum and looking after her. And my older brother said, yeah, I'm really hoping my daughter's do the same when I'm older. I'm like, I wouldn't bank on it. I wouldn't expect it. Yeah. I won't expect my children to look after me.
I don't think they will. No. I don't know if I'd want to.
They'll be robots by then.
But I think it was that thing of like when my parents got a divorce, my dad just literally, you know, as we've just spoken about, you know, what's the plan? He literally just turned to me and went, right, you can just be my wife now. And I was like, oh great, so you're just gonna move in with me. And so now I've got you and my husband following around going, what's the plan? It's like, no.
I need to write some comedy about this and get the fuck away from you both.
Oh,
what a gift to you though, like
slap you around the head and just go, what's the plan? No.
Does he cook?
He's an amazing cook.
Fantastic.
And he is brilliant with the kids. From the moment they were born, all the parents at school, they're all just like, the way your dad is with those children, like from the moment they were little, he was changing nappies, he was rocking them to sleep, he was incredible. So I was really, really lucky.
Yeah, my dad's good like that, although he does have his own parenting style. I remember he babysat for us once when Joe was about 2, I think, and we got back at like 10:30, and they were just sitting here on the sofa watching Die Hard 2. And I was like, he was like, oh, he couldn't sleep. And I was like, yeah, but that's, you don't, the 2-year-old says they can't sleep. You don't go, fair enough, there's a Bruce Willis film on.
You can share my beer.
Yeah, no, fine.
It's like Modern Family when he's like, look, she just really finds Scarface soothing.
That sounds like my dad's 87, so he's a slightly different generation. And I remember when Hugo was 1 and just started walking, and I said, oh, Dad, and he wasn't sleeping. And I said, look, I was back in Australia. I said, I just need a shower for 5 minutes. Can you just look after him? Anyway, so I have a shower, come out, open the door, and he said, don't worry, I'll find him.
Have you ever had that panic where you're looking after someone else's child? Because I remember we've had it, our whole kitchen redone now, but we had this like, I don't know how to say the word, enclave?
Yeah.
Okay. Enclave, right? So we had this like tumble dryer, and then behind the tumble dryer was an enclave. So my two found it really funny that they could get in there and I couldn't get to them. But they were like, you know, 3 and 4 or whatever at the time. But then I had my goddaughter, and she was only like a year.
Oh,
and
no. They were little.
And they'd gone to a wedding, and they called me from the wedding going, is everything okay? And my two were just crying. I was like, yeah, no, everything's fine. She's still behind the tumble dryer.
Oh, God.
She's behind the tumble dryer. And I can't get her out. I was like, no, everything's absolutely fine.
She's great. She's so cute.
And she's just sat there behind the tumble dryer going, yeah, I'm not going to come out, actually. It's warm back here.
Line up the Haribo, or you just like anything to come out?
I was literally bribing my children, going, please. And they just, she had a nappy on, so she had the big old nappy cushion bum. And my son just had to go behind her and just like push her really firmly to get out of the enclave. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, thanks so much for looking after her. I was like, yeah, no, fine. She totally didn't get stuck in the wall.
It was all good.
Oh. So you've done Hell Hath No Fury. But I want to ask you, because I haven't seen your previous show, which was #NotAllMen.
So #NotAllMen came from the #NotAllMen. It came from, I put a tweet out about a guy masturbating on the train, and a guy, very angry guy, he replied to me at @SMonito #NotAllMen, and I just thought, what an interesting reaction to that tweet, that if we go, this guy's committed a crime, that our instant reaction is go, well, we're not all like that. And it's like, wow, okay, that's very telling about you, because no one said that.
Yeah.
And so the whole show was just about masculinity and different types of masculinity, and in particular growing up in Essex, you know, especially during the time of the Gulf War, the whole constant barrage of media representation of Arab men was just, they're violent, they're savage. And obviously I had this man, you know, bringing me up, who was loving and kind and sweet, so that didn't comply. But then we had the 90s lad culture, so I was
being told all these messages that Arab men are really backward, but then growing up in 90s Essex where it was all like lads, lads, lads and, you know, get your tits out type of mags. Mm. And I was like, well, that doesn't feel like I'm really liberated at the moment. Mm. So it was just about, yeah, it was about masculinity and the conflict of those two.
Yeah. And it's,
you know, those banty topics.
Yeah. People are pretty reasonable when it comes to masculinity, I found, Esther. What are you on about? Hush now.
Listen, I think there's a whole sitcom in, I think my dad and your dad should move in together, but in like a house between our houses. I think that would be a sitcom, and there's just doors between the houses, and there's an old white man and an old Lebanese man trying to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's top bants.
Trying to make it work like it's a marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad just storming out going, he has left that bath filled with filthy water yet again.
I think it'd be amazing. Oh, so your new show, Esther, what's the deal with the tour and all of that? What's going on?
So I'm kicking off at Soho Theatre on the 17th, 18th and 19th of August, and then I shall be off doing 10 different cities up and down the UK up until the end of October.
And you're doing some of my favourite rooms. You're doing The Stand in Glasgow and in Edinburgh, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, doing The Stand
and the Glee Club in Birmingham, I saw.
Yes,
lovely.
Glee Birmingham, Stand in Edinburgh, Stand in Glasgow, Stand in Newcastle.
Yeah.
I think Leeds, Oxford, Bristol, Southend.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What I like about being a double act, obviously we go off on our in the Scummy Mummies tour van with Ellie's dad. We like an after show curry. This is our tradition.
Oh, that's so nice.
And then we, yeah, so and Ellie's dad
gives us a little critique of the show, how he thinks it went.
Oh, that's always fun.
Yeah,
isn't it? That's always fun.
I think what you should, I love when we used to finish with Dirty Dancing. I was Patrick Swayze, obviously, and I lifted Ellie up at the end.
Well, it was, but do you remember, it was before we did it, he saw us rehearse it in the pub at the sound check, and we'd know it was a preview, so we'd not done it before, and he was like, what, that song there, what is it, when she lifts you up, what's that from? And I was like, that's Dirty Dancing, Dad, that's from the film, and he's like, Dirty Dancing? Oh, I don't think I've seen it.
No one would have heard of that.
He's like, I don't think that's going to go down. No one's going to get that. And I was like, they really are, Dad. It's mostly middle-aged women. I promise you, there's no one in the pub who hasn't seen
that. Yeah, as soon as you hear
it. Literally the only film on this planet that every single middle-aged woman knows is Dirty Dancing.
Yeah,
but I love the fact that he's like,
no.
He's like,
have you thought about Die Hard?
Yeah. Citizen Kane's a good film, isn't it? You know? Yeah.
Citizen Kane.
But to be fair, we then the show, and of course it blew the roof off. Everybody loved it. Everybody loved Benny because you lift me up at the end. It was all hilarious.
Yes.
It was all great. And to be fair, he came up and he went, "You were completely right. You're completely right, girls. No, that was brilliant. That was bloody brilliant. I don't understand it, but they liked it. That's what matters."
I remember when I did Live at the Apollo, and at the end when I said, "Right, I've got to go now," and there was this huge round. I mean, it was unbelievable, but it was a huge round of applause. And my dad afterwards went, "You just stood there. Like, why did you just stand there?" And I was like. And my husband was like, because she just had this huge round of applause. Like, what's she supposed to do?
Yeah.
And he was going, yeah, no. I was like, I love the fact that's the only thing you have to say to me.
Shall we do the Scummy Mummy confessions?
I've got a feeling I'm going to be judged quite harshly. So we went to Thorpe Park, me, my husband, the children, and we wanted to go on the Nemesis. But my son, who was 7, so this isn't that long ago, was a little bit too small. And so we tried to get on and they said, no, he's too small. So we went away. And then when they changed the staff over, we filled his shoes with napkins.
No. That's amazing.
And then he was really like, I don't want to do this. And we were like, we really want to go on the Nemesis. So he was walking like a deer that had just learnt to walk. It was like seeing him walk in stilettos. He was a wobbling. To his doom. And then when we got there, the guy was like, no. That child just has loads of napkins in their shoes.
This is not his first rodeo.
So then me and my husband, me and Neil, we were so dejected that my daughter just went, just get us an ice cream and put us on this bench. You and Dad just go. And so we ended up then going back to the guy. And he was like, sorry, where are your children now? And we were like, oh, they're over there. And he's like, so you've literally dumped your kids. And Neil was like, Mate, do you know how expensive? It's so expensive to get in here. So there is no way I'm not going on Nemesis. So we went round the Nemesis, and when we came home, my dad was like, "So, did you have fun?" And my daughter was like, "Yeah, no, it's really good to sit on a bench and watch your parents have a like absolute laugh because they refused to go on age appropriate." And the guy was going to us, "Do you realise these safety measures are for their safety?" And I felt very shamed, really embarrassed. I was like, no, I do understand that.
Yeah,
no, but it's also a lot of money and I want to make use of all the rides.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and he was only a fraction off.
Fine. There's margins of, you know. Yeah.
That's reminded me of a similar, though not as good, theme park story where my life hack, actually, of going to a theme park is go with another family. If you really like the rides, I really like the big rides, go with another family who are really scared of rides and then they have to look after the children.
Yes.
So we went with our other radio, miserable Steve Hill.
Oh, he's got a pathological fear of most things.
Hates heights, yeah. Afraid of heights. Harriet, his partner, she's not keen on the rides either. And so little George had not really been on any, but we were like, yeah, let's go on Swarm. It'll be fine, George, it'll be fine. And George and Charlie are the same age. So Charlie's like, come on, mate. And George is like, okay. And we were like, it's fine. Here's Joe, you take the little one, you go over and look after him.
Yeah,
we'll go on this ride. By the time we got to the front of this queue, George was like the colour of paper. He was just whiter than I've ever seen him. But at that point, he had to get on the ride. We couldn't just
bought the ticket, took the ride,
and it was someone else's child, so we couldn't even go and sit on that bench. It was like, hey, this is what we're doing, George. You're all fine. And then we went on, and you know they take a picture of you. There's a picture. She's laughing because she's seen it. There's this picture of like me going and George looking like a Victorian ghost child screaming, just like. It's just
making memories.
And we then had to deliver this shaking white-faced child to his parents, going, he told you he'd have a lovely time. Oh no. And George was like, I'm never doing that again.
No. Well, at least he's, you know, experienced it and now he knows what he likes.
Exactly. Exactly. And then weirdly, later on in the day, I just went on because my husband's not a massive fan, so I just went on all the really hardcore rides on my own, feeling like a really sad old twat.
But there were many adults.
Plenty of adults, and they all had a nice time. And then George and Charlie got really into the Walking Dead ride, and I was like, alright, so you're fine with like undead people looming out of the fucking dark, whereas I find that unpleasant.
I'd find that unpleasant,
but, you know, kids, eh?
Last weekend I went away for the first weekend with my boyfriend, and on the way there I remembered that I had really long nipple hair, so I bought some tweezers without checking out the price, boots, £14.
Oh, were they tweezer mans?
Yes.
They're the best ones, but they're very expensive. But you pay for quality.
Yeah. The pink ones in the tube. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, so there I was on the way to my seaside weekend away, and I was like, I just have to excuse myself and go to the loo. And I plucked my nipples hairs before I arrived. I was like, this is the life I lead. I can get my nips ready for the sexy weekend. But yeah, they're very long, the nipple hairs, if you look. And because I don't wear... I'm not wearing my glasses when I look at my own boobs, you know. So, and then just the other day, I was like...
Nipple grooming.
Fucking hell, it's like a spider. Like, oh, really? It was like eight legs like coming out from that.
No, chin hairs with me.
That's is it?
I get a big chin hair. I've got out that
I get loads.
Yeah, the other day I went for a lip wax. And she said, and the chin too? And I was like, good. Yeah, that's
fine. I once went for a bikini wax and the woman just looked straight down at my crotch, not my face, not my name, just looked at my crotch and she went, are you Turkish?
Oh, wow.
I was like, Lebanese actually, but yeah, we've all got very thick hair consistency.
What, it growing the shape of the flag? What is she? I mean,
she must have just assumed, because I live in an area that's quite Turkish, but she must have just assumed. She was just, are you Turkish? And I was like, don't say that based on my pubic hair. Right?
That's a whole new weird kind of racism I've never even thought
about. Like reading the tea leaves.
She's like, oh yes, I can sense. New changes are coming. Your tour will go well. I can sense it in your pubic reading.
Oh my god.
I thought I found my first grey pube.
Oh, it's alarming.
Like, this is the moment. I thought I found, and I was like, oh my god, and it's enormous. It's so long.
It's really long.
And I was like, oh no, it's the hair off my head that's fallen onto my pubes.
Oh, okay.
I was quite relieved. Just the length was astonishing.
I know, I'm only white bearded in the undercarriage, not on the top bush, just in the in in the underbits.
Oh, I haven't had a proper look down there for ages.
You've almost got like a goatee.
Yes,
you've got a bit of a David Guest.
Yes, a little whisk. Salt and pepper down below, but a cappuccino, you know, like an espresso.
You've got a bit of George Clooney down there.
Yes, George Clooney.
Or Jeremy Beadle.
Anyway, as always, it's gone a bit south. Gone a bit blue.
But I think your boyfriend should really appreciate the nipple grooming. Has he plucked
his
nipple hair?
His nipples? Yeah. Exactly.
I didn't notice. But it wasn't.
Imagine if you just said it to him. Said it to him, matter of fact.
Imagine, wouldn't that be
I'm
nice?
I'm just going to nip out here and pluck my nipples. And then I'll be back ready for sex. You up for it?
Yeah, yeah. Give me five to 8 minutes. I'll just
give me 30 minutes. You're literally strumming up a lawnmower.
Just give me a good half an hour. No, I'll be good. Yeah, no, just one episode of Ted Lasso, that's fine. Anyway, I just thought, that's some real life, you know?
True stories. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Thank you for sharing.
I'm now glad for the investment. You know, sometimes those impulse purchases at the railway station of the tweezers, you know.
It's got to be done, mate.
You've got to have these conversations as well, like, because my daughter, she's now coming up to the age of puberty, so her body's changing. And when I started talking to her about the fact that, you know, you're going to get boobs, she burst into tears and she went, oh my God, am I going to wake up with boobs like yours? Because in her mind, she thought she was still going to have this little body, but then these, like, mine are like,
I looked at my boobs the other day, I thought, if you've got a raw sausage and just...
Flattened it.
That's what my boobs
are. Mine are like just two pita breads that have been glued to my front.
Yes. Just
with
just
like
flat.
Two raisins.
Yes. Or just like a, you know, like if you sliced a chorizo that lengthway, that way, just on top there. And just, they're just like flappy
boobs.
Yeah. Mine are like panna cotta. But then the nipples are like champagne corks sticking out.
Oh, wow. So you've got like a Marion Antoinette breast.
I don't know.
No, she's got fucking excellent boobs. I've seen them.
They're all right,
so
but the nipples
times.
Are extraordinary. So
that's fun.
Like a pepperoni on a plate of jelly.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Oh, lovely. You are welcome, listeners.
Writing some pornography.
Pornography.
Now that you're all
about. If you'd like to tell us about your breasts, why not write in?
We'll have a lovely
time. Pictures, welcome. scummymoriespodcast@gmail.com. Well, there we go. Excellent confession. Thank you very much, Esther. And once again, your show is called
Hell Hath No Fury.
Yes, and it's all around the country.
It is.
Where do people go to get tickets?
You can go to my Instagram or just type in Esther Manito tour tickets. It will pop up.
Oh, Esther, it's been so lovely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun. And that's it from us for now. Thank you for listening. Until next time. What are you talking about? Horses?
All horses' birthdays, I think the 1st of August.
Says fucking who? The horse?
The 1st of August each year is the date all horses in the Southern Hemisphere are judged to turn 1 year older, no matter their actual foaling date.
So it's not their birthday.
But this is implemented to achieve a uniform date for all equestrian pursuits and was introduced because of the historical lack of records of actual foaling dates.
Right, so if a horse is born on the 31st of December, it's one the next day.
It's 1st of August.
Oh, sorry,
if
it's born on the 31st of July and it's...
Yeah.
The next day it's one.
Yeah.
That's horseshit is what that is.
You're very welcome.
What absolute nonsense.
But I can't get that out of my head. Every time someone says...
How did you know that?
Because someone's birthday was the 1st of August and they said, but it's also the horse's birthday.
But
all horses...
We're looking at your calendar, it did look like you had that saved in your calendar. Do you have that saved in your calendar?
No, it's in my mind.
Oh, it's because you opened your calendar and went, it's all horses' birthday, which is why I was like, it's your child's...
All horses, yes, it's my birthday.
You don't even like horses.
I know, but I can't get it out of my head.
Why do you care when it's their birthday?
I know, but it's sort of like a car crash. It's like, I can't look away. I'm like, someone says the 1st of August. I'm like, but it's the horse's birthday.
She's got a picture of a horse with a hat on. Oh no!
Happy horse's birthday!
Happy horse's birthday!
Yeah, what about snakes? When's their birthday?
Don't know. It's like the queen's birthday. It's not really her birthday. Although now she's dead. Sorry, but anyway, apologies.
And why is it only the Southern Hemisphere? Is the Northern Hemisphere on the 1st of January, or is it they just don't have one?
Oh, yeah, why the Southern Hemisphere?
I don't know. I only know the Southern. My specialist subject for Mastermind is a horse's birthday.
Wait a minute, I'm googling now. It says every thoroughbred horse in the Northern Hemisphere has the same birthday, January the 1st. So the universal birthday is August the 1st in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah. So mental.
That's fucking stupid.
Well, come and see Esther's show.
It's called All Horses.
All horses, all the time. Hashtag not all horses.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.